Welcome to a Whirly Bear Productions podcast with me, Amber Williams. We explore film finance and distribution, featuring insights from filmmakers, entertainment lawyers, and industry experts.
Hello, and welcome to my episode dedicated to Ben and Suzanne, a reunion in four parts with writer, producer, and director Sean Serevaratne. Sean Serevaratne is a writer and director of emo movies. He teaches at Brooklyn Steam Center, is the co-host of RomaCast, a podcast about Roma, his films and working methods. Sean runs Redacted Screenings. He's made multiple short films, and they've screened at Nantucket, Montclair, Camfest, San Diego Asian, and Bushwick. He's based in New York City. This podcast episode is really useful. It has information about marketing, building a community, how to get the most out of yourself by a Southwest screening, as well as how to keep the budget down on production. Enjoy.
So, Sean, welcome to the show.
Awesome.
Thank
Happy to be here.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you.
Brilliant. Thank you so much for coming on. So Sean is the writer, director, and producer of Ben, Suzanne, A Reunion in Four Parts. I really enjoyed the film. I thought it was great. What I really liked is the raw, honest depiction of a relationship. So it was hard to watch in some parts because, you know, you've really felt that at times and you're like, oh no, God, I remember that back in the day. So I thought that was depicted perfectly. So do you want to just tell us a little bit about the film?
Yeah. I mean, there's so much to say about the film because it's been a 14-year journey to create the movie. So it's been a long time working on it. And yeah, I mean, I could break it up into a couple different phases of the project, if that's helpful to kind of like sort of work through, to kind of like recap a little bit of like what about the film. But Ben and Suzanne, A Reunion in Four Parts, for folks that have not seen the movie, is a story about a couple in a long-distance relationship. They haven't seen each other in a long period of time. They are reuniting in Sri Lanka, where Suzanne has been working for the last year or two. And you think it's going to be this perfect romantic reunion, and it is 100% not that. The tagline when I was working on the movie was Scenes from a Vacation. And I think that was the sort of like thesis that I had in mind of like how to create almost like a diaristic depiction of being on a vacation as a couple. And I feel like a lot of people that have been in relationships and traveled with partners before will be able to relate to many different aspects of the movie. And then it also has a lot to do with the nature of intimacy and relationships, trying to get back in sync when you are on different, have had different life experiences for a period of time. And I was also really interested in exploring perspectives. So one of the things in the movie, it's not about Ben's the hero or Suzanne's the hero and the other person's the villain. It's about presenting two people as people with different perspectives. And it doesn't mean that they can't get along because of these different perspectives, but how do we negotiate having different views on things? And neither person is wrong, and both people are justified based on their expectations and their beliefs. So I really wanted to explore the idea of perspectives in the film. And then there's a political component to the film as well. So the nature of the work that Suzanne is involved in is NGO work, where it's all what she's doing is like really great in theory, which is microfinance to help small businesses, small female-owned businesses out. But the unfortunate side of a lot of the kind of NGO work that happens in the world is that it is tied to a non-governmental organization, typically a bank. And so, you know, this has been documented in throughout Africa and in India, where they have these organizations that come in to help people. And then there comes the time where they, the folks that they help need to pay back this loan. That's the thing, it is a loan. And so, you know, it's been the cause of much strife in a lot of these communities and countries. And so wanted to explore the idea of like someone that like really wanted to do good. And then what happens, like, how is it possible to try and attempt to do good in the world? So these are like the threads of that we're exploring through this relationship in Ben and Suzanne, A Reunion in Four Parts. I'd been working on it for 14 years. In 2009, I was in a long distance relationship, and I was living here in I was in New Jersey at the time, and she was working in India for an NGO, not similar to the one in the movie, something a little bit different, but she was training local women how to use computers for like IT work. And so, again, went over there, thought it was going to be this amazing trip. And we were just on different pages. And on the ironic thing is by the end of the trip, it's all about timing. That's when things start to come back in sync. But it didn't really come until that New Year's Day when we were leaving. So something about that experience is like, it was so terrible while I was going through it. But even at that moment, I was like, this would be an interesting movie. And actually that experience kickstarted my whole movie making career. So this idea was the whole reason that I got into making movies, because I wanted to make this movie from this experience. And so after that experience, that's when I started making short films and crafting, you know, learning my craft and working towards this goal. But really in the last year, and then we'll take a break from my response. But in the last year is when everything really kickstarted. So February of last year, 2 years before, I had already said I'm moving it to Sri Lanka. I was in Sri Lanka with my mom, and I was telling one of our drivers on our trip while we were over there about the movie. And my mom's like, why are you making this movie in India? Like, you're Sri Lankan, and like, we're in Sri Lanka, and this is a beautiful country. And I was like, yeah, but like, the story actually took place in India. And my mom's like, why does that matter? And I was like, good point. And once I kind of got that in my head, it actually completely freed me from the original experience. And then I got to be much more adaptive and really consider like the 14 years of adult committed relationships and how that's kind of coming into the movie, and just be true to like ideas and not have to be such a stickler for like the specifics of how things went down in 2009. And so that was really great. And so in February 2023, we did a location scout in Sri Lanka. So Anastasia, who plays Suzanne, and I went to Sri Lanka, stayed at my dad's place, did some location scout, shot a short film while we were out there too, which is the third part of this series that we have, because there's three other short films that lead up to this movie. And we got in touch with a production company there, had a great meeting. And the minute you pay that first check, that's when things start to become real. So the ball is rolling down the hill. And then we did all of our pre-production in those months leading up to it, shot in July. Strike happened 2 days into the shoot, and we were on hold for a week until we got the waiver agreement. We were 1 day away from having to pull the plug on the entire production, because we were just sitting in Sri Lanka siphoning money. And, you know, at a certain, we can't continue that indefinitely. And so 1 day away, it was so hard. And I was like, I don't know, like, maybe we'll come back in February. Maybe we'll come back next summer. Maybe I never get to make this movie again. I don't know. And then we got our agreement that came in literally after that conversation. We were in the van just going to shoot some exteriors, and that agreement came in and we were able to continue production. And finished August 4th, got into editing in September, submitted our cut to South by Southwest, our first rough cut. It got in off the first rough cut at the end of September.
That's brilliant.
With no connections or anything like that. Just like, not like we knew a program or anything, just like a true, just like submitted through the submission portal. And then just working on editing over there. So that's kind of the very much condensed history of this 14-year journey to make Ben and Suzanne.
And so were there any times that you felt like you were losing momentum? Because that's a long time to keep a project going, isn't it? How did you get through those times? What was that like?
Yeah, I mean, I'd say like a lot of that time was spent on like writing. And then there was always these moments where I was like, okay, I'm going to aim for it for this year, to do it this year. And then there's whatever setback, you know, that's either external or internal. You know, some of these internal setbacks is I need to focus on work. I need to focus on like making some more money. I need to revise this script. I need to get it perfect. I was really into this, like, you know, trying to get this like perfect version of a thing that would then go to the Sundance Labs and then get all these grants. And perfection doesn't really exist. But like at that time, I was really like, you know, striving for that. But I'd say alongside all of that, I was making short films. And that's actually, I think, was so important to this journey. So like all those things where I wasn't actively working on this project, everything that I was doing was in some way working towards it. So in 2014, I had this idea of like, I want to explore the beginning of this long distance relationship. So the end of when they've been together and the beginning of when it starts. And I wrote a short film called Tourists, which captures like the day going to the airport, flashbacking with like this perfect sort of summer day. And that's when I met Sathya Sridharan and Anastasia Olowen, who plays Ben and Suzanne in the feature. And I met them doing casting for the short. And that's really when like the characters solidified. And that's when I was like, okay, cool. I understand who these people are. And it's like a little bit of what I'm writing for, but it's a little bit of what they're bringing into it. And then it became this like, you know, now 10-year friendship and 10-year artistic collaboration, which is kind of, you know, the kind of collaboration that I think a director dreams about. You know, it's the whole Ethan Hawke and Julie Delpy and Richard Linklater working on the Before movies for, you know, 20 something years. Is we kind of got to do that, and not even in an intentional way, because I always thought, okay, after making Tourists, then next year we're going to make the feature. And then I think it's easy to put yourself in this kind of like, all right, I want to follow the traditional model. So then we're going to try to do some, get the script ready. We'll get into a lab. We're going to try to get the financing. We're going to apply for grants. And then things don't really always work in that kind of linear way. So there are definitely there. I always knew I was going to do this. But I think a moment needs to hit for every artist and every individual where you're like, I need to do it now, or I'm going to like, I feel like it's not going to happen. And I'm just going to then be like completely depressed for like the rest of my life that like I missed out on the time to do it. And then I think the timing kind of finds you, and you need to find the timing for it. So it's like a factor of so many different things that need to just like come perfectly in sync for stuff to happen. But I think it really happens when you finally reach the breaking point and you're like, yes, now is the time. I don't have the money yet. The script is still in progress, but like, I think we can make this happen, and I'm going to do it. And we're doing it July 1st. And you set that date and you pay that first check. And then you had to play catch up, which yeah. I found very, very helpful. But yeah, I mean, it's a lot of time working towards this in a writing capacity. But I'm always thinking about it. And I think daydreaming and taking notes and growing. You know, who I was in 2009 is different from who I was in 2012 versus 2016 versus 2020 versus now. And so then I also allowed for the project to grow with me and my reflections and my influences, because those things change over time too. And another thing that took time is I do page one rewrites. So whenever I'm rewriting, I don't take the previous version and then make tweaks on it. I want to start totally fresh. I don't want to be beholden to any previous ideas. And if any previous ideas make its way into it, it's still being filtered through who I am currently at that time while writing it. So yeah, all these things lead to a very lengthy process.
So do you have any tips and tips and tricks for keeping the budget to a minimum? Because you self-funded the film, didn't you?
Yeah, it's a combination of self-funding, some equity financing that came from friends and family. And I could definitely talk more about like the financing side of things too, and fiscal sponsorship, crowdfunded contributions. But yeah, tips and tricks for keeping the budget low. I remember when we were first, you know, a version I had in 2016, and we had a DP on board, not the one that ended up being our DP for this project, Molly Scotty, but the cinematographer for Tourists, and going through the budget, and we had producers looked at it, and, you know, some folks are like, oh, this is like a $5 million movie. I was like, what? Like, really? Like, I don't know. I think there's a way that it can be done for not 5 million. And if we're applying sort of Hollywood filming standards, then yeah, perhaps this is a $5 million movie, but like, this is an indie movie, and we need to make it the way indie movies get done. And so I think the first tip is you cannot look to the Hollywood movies as the model for how to structure your indie film. You need to be looking at independent films that were actually made in that budget range. And I think what's really helpful is to go back to directors' first features, you know, because some people say like, oh, Dazed and Confused was an indie film. It's like, no, it's actually not an indie film. That was a studio movie that has an indie sensibility to it. But made with like a much more significant budget. You got to go back to Slacker. You know, you need to go back to Kevin Smith's Clerks and see how these movies were made, because that's what's going to give you the model for what's possible. So that's the first tip. The second tip is control. So ultimately, when we're talking about money, we're talking about paying for things that we need to be in control of. So the bigger the budget you have, the more things you can control. You know, a big studio picture will block out, you need to shoot a scene in Central Park, clear all of Central Park, fill it with extras, light the entire set. So you're able to actually control every single aspect of that frame, and that's what you're paying for with that money. So when you're working with a lower budget, you need to be very clear about what are the things you need to control, the things you'd like to control, and the things that, you know, if this is out of my control, actually this could be kind of interesting and be in support of the project. So you need to be comfortable with some of these things being out of your control. So I knew budget-wise going into it, like, you know, we film a lot of things on location in Sri Lanka. And interest-wise, I had no interest in blocking off that entire bus station and filling it with extras. I wanted so much of the movie to feel like documentary. And it was very much inspired by a lot of documentary, particularly like the Verite strain of documentaries. And so you need to be kind of able to say, all right, well, we're going to film in this bus station. So that means we're not going to film with any lights. We're going to have a camera crew over there, but let's use telephoto lenses. So this way we're always far from the action, but looking at it voyeuristically. Let's stage all the action prior to. And then when we film it, basically we're shooting it as if it's an actual documentary. So you give yourself certain parameters and restrictions to work within. And then it's like, okay, cool. So what am I controlling here? I'm controlling where the camera is going to be. I'm controlling film stock. I'm controlling the actors and what their actions are going to be in this space. But everything else, I am relieving from my control and embracing what is actually true. So I think that having a philosophy for how you're going to approach it and the things you need to control versus the things you don't is critically important when making an independent film.
That's interesting. It's a good way of looking at it. Yeah. For sure.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of any other sort of tips and tricks. I mean, one of the things that helped keep the budget down was filming in Sri Lanka, which, you know, is always going to be in either India and then now Sri Lanka. And so everything is just, you know, with the exchange rates and like crew rates and everything like that is a little bit different. That being said, it's not so dramatically cheaper. You know, it's still like, you know, cost. I remember thinking like, oh, maybe it's possible to do this for like $50,000. And maybe we could do this with like a crew of like four people. You know, like I had one version of the movie that was that. And then our budget for the movie after everything, you know, pre-production, production, post is 250K. And I'd say the Sri Lanka side of it, just filming everything and like getting the crew over there and equipment and production, probably about 160 to 170K.
That's fantastic. Wow. Yeah. Really good.
Yeah. Yeah.
I forget where
I was going exactly with that, but I think just, speaking about like where the budget goes, it's like you can save money in a lot of places. And then also like the way we did like some of the payments for things, like everybody, like all the above the line, we got the same rate. So it's just like, and I'm not taking any money from the project. So it's very much just like, here is the rate for everyone as a project rate with points on the back end. So that's how we sort of like negotiated like some of the deals with all of our like above the line crew. And then actors got paid their SAG standard rate, which actually when you're filming abroad, that's probably something very helpful to know for filmmakers. When you're filming abroad, it's not the same low budget agreement that you would do if you were filming in the United States, where I think it's like $200 a day minimum. It goes up to $750 a day minimum, and then other stipulations that are there.
Okay. Let's talk a bit about marketing and building a community. I know you said you did a crowdfunding campaign, so that's especially important. So can you tell us a bit about the marketing of the film and how you go about building a community and what you think went best in your marketing?
Cool. Awesome. Yeah. So I'll start with the building of the community first, before the marketing. So I have not done crowdfunding since my first thesis film in graduate school. So, and that was like $5,000 that I raised, and that was in 2012. So I think there's a lot of, I think goodwill is a good part of it. So I've been making movies then for 10 plus years after that first fundraise. Everyone that's a part of like my friend circle and my film network and my social media network is seeing me making all these movies on a consistent basis. So making these short films. And for these short films, I never asked anybody for money. I would save money up and then I would make the short film with that. Or like if it's a project that I got hired for, then that's the budget that's coming from that project. But so I think having that goodwill was able to build that up. And I was able to build like a really strong network of friends and collaborators and film professionals over the course of this year, these years, that was based pretty much on like friendship, right? So really just like getting to know people or being interested in their work, and never sort of trying to network or market in a way where it's like, okay, I'm trying to like get this person or trying to get this person, where it's like you're trying to be a hunter. You know, it's more like being a cultivator and being genuine, right? And then sort of building that up. And I think the genuine relationship is really, really important, because then when it comes time for the ask, so, you know, the first community around it are the people that are like super, super close to me, like the collaborators, which again is like, you know, with these actors, I've been working with them for 10 years. And just then some of the newer collaborators, I maybe just met them like fairly recently, but it's about building that trust. And I think trust is so important on the collaborative level with every one of your collaborators. And then for the financing, is like first reaching out to like my friends that are not part of the film industry. So I think part of building that community is like not being so insular in your community, where your community is only filmmakers, because you need to have a film, a community that goes beyond that, and an audience that goes beyond just the film audience. So I have friends that are in the medical field. I have friends that are in marketing. I have friends that are in finance. And so those are also friends with jobs that are able to sort of help provide some at least like small investment. And if you get enough of these smaller investments, then it kind of amounts to quite a big pool of money. So that's how we kind of started off, and like not being public about it, but just writing a letter and doing direct reach out to those friends and family members that are part of that community to contribute to the film and come on board as an equity investor, or contribute a tax deductible donation for it. By the time it came to doing the crowdfunding, which was the in post-production, after post-production, so before South by Southwest, to do all the finishing, so the color, the PR, the sound, festival things, DCPs, that's when we had to go to the larger community. And so creating that crowdfunding platform, we used Fractured Atlas for it. And again, a strategy that was really helpful was not going public with it right away. So doing the individual outreach, I was sending personalized individual messages to like anyone that I've like ever met, but in like a sort of like strategic way, not just like mass email. So really just like, hey, Amber, like, I hope things are well. Like, you know, like, what have you been up to? I saw that you've been working on your podcast. Like, that's super cool. I just wanted to let you know that I'm working on my film. I've been working on this. You might remember we talked about it a few years ago when we met, right? Like, and then giving this and giving a few options and tiers. And it was able to create like a lot of excitement. Like, and at that stage, when we went public with the crowdfunding campaign was 1 week before it was going to end. And then that's where the remainder of the funds came. So at that point, folks contributing are already seeing a significant pool of money. I think we were trying to raise $30,000, already seeing $20,000 in the bucket. And so it's like, okay, cool. Like, this is happening. And I think that's something that's really helpful, is it's easier to mobilize the community when something feels actual versus hypothetical or theoretical. So I don't think if I started crowdfunding like at the beginning of the project, I'd have that same success as at the end, where I'm like, here is the stuff. It is done. It is ready. We are going to South by Southwest. This is happening. Now we need your help. And then people were really able to come support. And then that community, they were tagging in their friends. And then we were getting like donations from, you know, significant donations from folks that I did not personally know. And so that's how you know it's starting to reach out a little bit further. So that's the community around sort of building the film. And then the marketing side of it, I'm very much into the sort of handmade approach. Like, I want everything to feel kind of punk, and I want everything to feel like not like you're what you'd typically expect from like Hollywood indie production or like a Hollywood production. So I was producing zines, you know, like little fold out, like almost like a storytelling booklet that I was giving out at South by Southwest. Our posters we did as a four color CMYK screen print. So we have screen printed posters. Some of the rewards that we're creating that's also going to be a part of that marketing is the a zine. So like a zine that again feels like a classic sort of like punk zine that's going to have artifacts and reflections on the creation of the movie, but also creating a strong visual identity. So like in how we utilize our social media and Instagram, what is the, you know, there's needs, you need to be considering your, what is your font? What is the sort of like visual aesthetic of how you're going to get things out into the world, your key images? So all that is like really important to like make sure it's like looking like not just good, but like true to like what the project is. And then like just trying to think of like with marketing, like, you know, we're doing mixtapes, you know, so Spotify mixtapes that are curated based on like the movie. And like now we're going to have ones curated based on the character, like for Ben, for Suzanne. And just trying to think of like, what are different ways to engage with an audience that's not just like purely promotional, because people aren't interested in purely promotional. And what I'm interested in is, I think this is a great learning experience for a lot of people of like, I made this indie movie that's truly independent in a very independent way. And I want to let people into that process and be reflective. And like, I'm almost treating like their social media like a journal and how we're posting about stuff. So everything is going to be coupled with like almost like a journal entry about a particular aspect of whatever it is we're talking about. And then I'd say the last point on marketing is getting a great PR company. So because there are some things that we can't do on our own, and a PR company has those relationships and with journalists and with podcasts like, you know, us being connected today, right now. And so working, you know, we work with Prodigy PR, Staley, Sharples was our PR, our publicist, and just finding someone that understands exactly what the project is. Cause there's a lot of PR companies that'll be like, oh yeah, this is cool. And like, but if they don't really understand the vision and they're not fully on board, then that's not the right partner for you. So finding a great PR company where they get exactly what the project is and what you want to do with it and like have a vision for like the right people to get involved is super, super critical. And that's something that will have to come out of pocket and come out of budget to pay for.
How much would you recommend that kind of marketing budget? How much was your marketing budget, or how much do you recommend independent filmmakers put aside?
I'd say you want to put aside at least $10,000 if you're doing an independent film. The PR, and this again was PR only for 2 months. So like when we want to do more PR in the future, then we'll have to sort of, do that as a separate thing. But so yeah, it's about like around $5,000 to $7,000, $5,000 to $10,000-ish just for the PR side of things. So ours, for us, it was $7,000, and then setting aside that $3,000 for any materials that you need to create, or even paying for like some of that online advertising. Something that's been really helpful is when you're posting on Instagram, doing that boost post option, and then being really targeted with your audience, what location this audience is going to be, what are their interests, and this is where it's really helpful to think about like all of these audience factors, you know, how old is this audience? And then target your ads directly for that. That's a smaller part of the budget. And then I did a lot of design things myself because I'm also a bit of a designer. But like if you need to hire that designer for that poster, then you're going to need to set aside that budget for that. So it kind of depends on like taking a sort of inventory of your creative collaborations and like who can make a poster for me, or if I need to hire a poster, starting those conversations and seeing what you're able to do. But I'd say like $10,000 minimum is what you want to set aside for PR and marketing.
Cool. What was South by Southwest like? And have you got any advice for a filmmaker that's going out there with their film, what to expect or how to make the most out of the experience?
I describe South by Southwest as like it's the feeling of when you of getting into college, and it's the first week at university. That's kind of like the biggest thing. It's like, you know, you got in. And like going to South by Southwest is like getting into a dream school, right? So you got into a dream school. And then once you're there, it's like you're also there with the folks that got into the dream school. And
it's really cute.
Yeah. And then you have alumni that are coming back to their school to like mentor and talk to all the new freshmen. You have people that are like returning for their sophomore year and their junior year. So I think that's like the best analogy, because when you think about it, and then there's like star quarterbacks, like somewhere at South by Southwest, Ryan Gosling's there, right? But like, did I see Ryan Gosling? No. And was he at the happy hours? Not really, but like he's there, right?
Yeah.
And so it's very much like I think of as being at school. And so what is the first week of college? It's you're getting acquainted with folks. Everyone's coming in with this excitement and you're meeting people. And I think that's the most important thing, is like, you are meeting, and it's not just going beyond the networking, just like meeting people, and like no matter who they are. And so I think a big thing is like, you know, meeting people, like making sure you're meeting the other filmmakers in your category and introducing yourself to them, talking about like the experiences you had making this movie. And then they are saying like, oh, I want to introduce you to this friend over here. And then you start to like kind of build this network, and also talking to people that are maybe greener than you. So there are a lot of younger filmmakers or people that were there with shorts that was like, I had so many great like interactions and conversations and friendships that now came out of that, because like you get to then be supporting them. And so it's like not just trying to network up, but like networking laterally and also supporting the people that maybe haven't gotten to the step that you're at yet. But beyond that, it's, you know, then it's like, what is the other thing that's true about college? Classes start. And so when classes start, that's like your film premiere, and you still need to do the work that's necessary for that. So putting up those posters, flyering, getting the word out, because with South by Southwest, there's a billion things happening all at the same time. Our movie premiered at the same time as Monkey Man. And it's like, what? So it's like, you gotta like get the word out, and just like, you know, Monkey Man, you'll be able to see in theaters like everywhere in the world next week. Suzanne, like, I'm gonna delete this hard drive after this screening. Like, what if you never get to see this movie again? So there's always gonna be a lot of competition. So you need to make sure, you can't just be like, okay, like the screening exists and like, everyone's just going to come to the screening. You have to be marketing and like street teaming to get it all out there into the world, because there's so much that's happening in a way that could feel a little bit overwhelming. I'd say at South by Southwest, it is kind of difficult to see movies a little bit, because you have to wait an hour beforehand, because there's no, even if you have like the badge and everything like that, and there's no press and industry screenings. So even press and industry folks need to like kind of prioritize and figure out their schedule. So I think just like trying to just like street team throughout that entire process is really important. And then following up with all the contacts that you make, which I'm still doing, but you're going to meet so many great people, and then people that are really champions of your movie. And you're going to meet audiences. And I think that's the best part of the screening, is we had three screenings, and then our first screening was at like 90% capacity.
Wow.
Our second and third screening were totally packed. And the first screening tends to be more industry, and the second and third screening tends to be more audience. So like the people that just have badges, the people that are movie fans. And I remember being at our second screening, and I was there already for sound check, and then the audience is filing in, and I went up to each person and I was like, hi, thank you so much for coming. And like, I know you had a lot of choices of what to pick, so thanks for coming to see Ben and Suzanne, and introduce myself to them. And even that was just like, right, like this is kind of what it's all about. Like, I'm getting to meet the people that are watching this movie. Like, this is how like the kind of like relationship can exist between the film and the director and the creators behind it and the audience that's out there. So not just trying to network at South by Southwest, but really trying to like meet all kinds of people, including your audience. And it's up to you to try to make the most out of these experiences, just like college, right? Like, it's not just handed to you. It's like the mm-hmm. classes exist. It's yeah. what you make out of the class that's what's going to be impactful.
That was brilliant. Thank you. That sounds really exciting.
No, it was very cool. It's very cool. And I'm really bummed that we can't do the whole thing right now. But
yes, We will do part two.
We'll do part two.
Fantastic.
Yeah, and then maybe for part two, Duran, our producer, will be able to hop in and then could also provide some insight into things.
Yeah, that'd be great. You've been fantastic today, and I've really enjoyed listening to you talk. So thank you so much. I'm very grateful, and the audience are going to love it too, and the information's been really valuable. So thank you. Cool. Thank you very
much. Yeah, absolutely. And if, like, after this conversation, if, like, you're thinking of, like, oh, is there anything, like, any follow-up to what we've talked about, or anything that's, like, go a little deeper on this or what, like, I will answer anything, like, total candor. I don't believe in TMI. Like,
brilliant.
About everything. Yeah. Cool. Awesome. So
fantastic.
Yeah, we'll connect over email and figure out a date next week. But again, next week I'm way more flexible because I'm not working. Yeah. So
okay.
Yeah.
Brilliant. All right. Enjoy the rest of your day. Thank you
awesome.
Very much.
Thank you, Amber. Appreciate it.
Take
this
care.
Was fun. Talk soon. All right. Bye bye.
Bye bye.
Please consider supporting us on Patreon. Your support not only helps us keep the show running, but also unlocks exclusive premium content just for our cherished subscribers. You can head to our Patreon page now, either through our website, whirlywebproductions.com/podcasts, or through our Instagram @filmfinancepodcast, and follow the link in the bio.